We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Molly Hanley.
You guys are ignorant and you're also naive.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
The last time a new starting quarterback took the league by storm the way Jimmy Garoppolo is, it was Aaron Rodgers. And what do the two have in common? They spent 3 years on the bench. Are they benefiting from all that time on the bench learning, or are they benefiting because they spent 3 years on the bench watching Brett Favre and Tom Brady? Because nobody else has a Brett Favre or Tom Brady for you to watch.
Garoppolo on the move, throws, and it is caught! Touchdown! Trent Taylor!
The ability to move in the pocket and not panic. Three-man pass rush. They've got eight defenders back, and Jimmy Garoppolo takes his time, scrambles to the left, and that sidearm delivery.
Is this idea of getting these kids on the field on day one, getting them out there as soon as you can, you got Trubisky out there week five, is it really a good idea?
I kind of know his mindset and his mental toughness to the weather. You know, he's not one to make excuses. You know, I respect and appreciate that about him.
Mully and Hanley.
Fruit and toot and fruit and
I'm Ragnar. Pay me.
That's how I roll, buddy.
Start your day with the teams you know.
The Nicola that we're seeing now, these last 3 or 4 weeks, is the guy that the Bulls thought they drafted and finally brought over when he got here a couple years ago.
Jaren Grant. The Lopez. Shoveled nicely and Heritage deposits it.
I mean, why not?
Mully Hanley.
This is all tricky.
Here we go. 5:04 on the score, and you have Mully and Hanley. We're so glad you're with us this morning. Our buddy Hal Barker is sitting in for Mike, who's taking a few days off. Good morning, Mr. Arkish. How are you?
I am good. Good morning to you, Brian. I know it's a little chilly out there.
A little frigid.
But feels good. Wakes you up.
That'll get you a little pep in your step. So, yeah, if you're heading out, I'm sure you're well aware that bitterly cold, but we're going to warm you up with some great sports conversation before we get out here at 9 o'clock. Have a lot on our plate. Olin Kreutz will stop by for our weekly visit, talk some Bears. A lot of interesting, well, I don't know if they're interesting, but there seem to be weekly questions that John Fox has to address. And yet again, yesterday, asked about his job status, didn't give you much light on his status, whether he's been told or not, but we'll talk about that. Dan Pompey will check in as well, Rich Campbell, and Bob Verdi, Mr. Blackhawks, and formerly the great columnist of the Chicago Tribune, one of our friends. We'll be joining the conversation as well, and you know, I'm interested when you hear John Fox each and every week have to field variations of, "Hey, are you fired? Have you been told you're fired? You know you're fired, right?" There's really no winning way to answer that question.
No, I actually left yesterday and headed up to Hallis Hall because I try and. You know, when you hear it on the radio, on TV, it's one thing. But when you look the guy in the eye, you get used to the body language and the whole thing. It helps a little bit. And I had a sense yesterday that maybe he is resigned to it at this point. My guess is that there was a pretty good feeling about a convincing win on Sunday, and then you go home for the holiday, and now you come to work, and you're looking around, and you're thinking, is this the last week I'm going to spend here, you know, in this building? I've been running the place for the last 3 years. So I'm not pretending to know anything. You know, we have sources. We talk to them. Everybody is assuming the same thing. It certainly, you know, would be difficult at best for Ryan Pace, for George McCaskey to make a case for. The real problem is that you've got this perception in the NFL that you can't go to the last year of your contract. They always talk about these lame duck coaches. And I'm not sure I've ever understood that, because in most other sports, you coach into the last year and then, you do a deal or you don't. They're loathe to do it in the NFL. And next year is the last year of John's deal. And so, If he was coming back, it's almost like there'd be an obligation to extend him for a year or two.
See, that's where I come from, too. And we've talked about this in the past, that because that seems to be the NFL way, if you don't extend him, well, then you're sending the message to everyone. It's like Kyle not picking up the option. You're on a rookie contract. We're not happy with you. We don't think it's good enough. you know, 80-20, you're out the door anyway, so we're not going to commit another year at whatever the money is. So if you want to have him go through that final year, you almost have to extend him. And then what's the number? 1 year, 2 years? I mean, that's not much of a statement either, right?
Well, and here's the big problem, is that I don't see any circumstances under which you can bring Dowell Loggins back as the offensive coordinator. You can't spend the offseason selling that to your fans, to Bears Nation, and quite frankly, to free agents.
Right.
You know, the agents who represent these players are really a bigger problem than the players in situations like that. And so if John was in a lame duck year, it's not impossible, but then it becomes harder to get the best young talent to coach offense. So they're kind of stuck in a position where there is a choice. Fire him or extend him, but do nothing, that's not an option. And so we know there's going to be news.
Dowell Loggins got the job when Adam Gase left, got elevated to keep Jay Cutler happy, pretty much, right? 90%, 80% just to keep continuity. And, you know, Jay was fickle Jay, and that's probably redundant. How do you think Mitch Trubisky feels about Dowell Loggins? Does he feel like there's an upgrade? Because there have been a couple times this season where in a post game, Mitch Trubisky seemed to have alluded to the fact that the head coach has the handcuffs on the play caller, and the play caller would like the young quarterback to do more things and would be allowed to do more things if he wasn't being told to do something else.
One of the things that we tend to ignore, and I think we need to pay more attention to it, is that a lot of this is generational and that there's age gaps here and that there's people you're dealing with. Just to take a step back, Brian, I don't agree with the perception that Dowell Loggins was hired to keep Jay Cutler happy. They already knew where they were with that Cutler contract. It's not like Jay Cutler went to the Pro Bowl under Adam Gase.
No.
He played better.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And I don't think even bringing him back another year, they were married to him. But they figured, all right, we got to take another look at this. So I think the fact that Cutler was comfortable with Loggins was a factor. But John Fox's track record hiring coordinators had been really good up until that. And the stunning thing about giving Loggins the job wasn't that he was the offensive coordinator, but was the staff that either Fox and he or he built around him. And so now you come back to this year and you ask the question, Mitch Trubisky is a 22-year-old kid. I mean, there's no other way to spin this. He's an impressive athlete. He's an impressive football player, but he's still a kid. And so now you got Loggins, who I want to say is 38. He may be 37, he may be 39, but he's in his late 30s. And so almost twice, you know, Trubisky's age. Mm-hmm. So he's going to but Loggins is not half, but he's 20 years younger than Fox.
Right.
Fox is
60. Right.
So, you know, it's almost like son, dad, grandpa. And I think the respect kind of flows that way and the perceptions. And so, you know, clearly Trubisky is going to be more intimidated by Fox than Loggins. And Loggins is going to be in the middle. And even though nobody wants to say, well, I put it on somebody else, I played off Fox against you, you know, I blamed it on dad, I blamed it on the boss, there's got to be some of that conversation between Trubisky and Loggins on occasion.
Sure,
and
right.
So I think that's probably where that comes from.
Especially if there's frustration from the quarterback and, you know, who's the sounding board, the guy he spends the most time with, right, which would be Dowell Loggins.
And you know, the other guy who doesn't get a pass here, I know for a fact that Ryan Pace does not interfere with what they do on the field. He doesn't tell his coaches what to do. It's not like Paxton Garr putting minutes limits on players
right.
with Thibodeau.
Right.
But when it comes to how we're going to develop Trubisky, you know, Pace and Fox sit down during the training camp in the preseason, and there's at least a theory, well, let's be conservative, let's go slow, you know, that type of stuff. So I don't think it's that, you know, Fox is taking certain plays out of the game plan on Sunday, but he's clearly preaching, let's not put him at risk, let's not ask him to do too much. And so in that respect, it probably puts some limits on what Loggins has done with him.
In other news, and we'll talk plenty of Bears, obviously, before we get out of here, but the Nico train keeps rolling. I know you had a lot of conversation about Nico yesterday, and that's what we've been talking about when it comes to the Bulls for the last month or so, not only on the court, but off the court. But yet again, 24 points, 8 rebounds, 28 minutes. That's pretty efficient. And Chris Dunn, 20 points, 12 assists, and they find a way to, after digging a bit of a hole in that first quarter up in Milwaukee, they have the Bucks number. They've beat them twice in about a week's time now. And so with Nico, it's the numbers are the numbers. I mean, they are scoring on average 109.7 points with Nico versus 95.7 without. And, you know, they're closing. And that's the important thing. They're finding ways to win. Again, a lot of people will be chagrined that they're ruining their chances for a top pick in the lottery. But here comes Zach LaVine. I mean, you've got reports that he's not only cleared for contact, but might be playing some G League games with the Windy City Bulls in short order here.
You know, what's really more interesting to me, and again, I'm not a basketball expert, but as a fan who's watched a lot of Bulls basketball over the years, I'm more struck by Dunn than I am by Nico.
Yeah.
Because this guy was the fifth pick in the draft. I mean, he's a significant lottery pick who was a big disappointment last year in Minnesota. Obviously, Paxson Garr saw something. You know, I mean, he's a key piece of this deal.
Hey, he was the guy they were going to draft when they were talking Jimmy Butler to Boston, even before they made the T-Wolves deal. I mean, that's a player they identified a couple years ago as if they got that deal and got that pick. That's the player they reportedly were going to select.
I mean, I'm watching him last night, and he looks like a legit point guard to me, you know. And now, I'm not an expert. But the Nico thing, if he doesn't get his face busted, we're not having most of this conversation, you know? I don't think any of us knew that he had that, I don't want to call it controversial, that different personality, let's say. I mean, I knew he was a little different. I knew he was a little standoffish. But, I mean, there's so much that's come out because Portis smacked him, you know? And so I don't see him as a critical piece of this. I think I'd like to see him keep doing this because now maybe you could get a first-round pick, maybe a 16 or a 20 or something like that.
Yeah, before you're thinking second-round pick, which they could sell for $3.5 million.
But if you're looking at Dunn as a 5, playing like a 5, Markkanen as a 7, maybe even being a 4 or a 5, Levine's an all-star, and you get another 3, 4, 5, you're pretty close in 1 year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So we'll talk some Bulls as well. And this segment of the show is brought to us by Burlington. Go back to basics at your Burlington store and score the everyday essentials you need, such as socks and underwear. Who doesn't need that? Denim plus towel sheets, stylish storage. They have it all. Burlington style for everyone. We've got the 5-5 coming up. Of course, we have plenty of time to take your phone calls as well, 312-644-6767. You got Mully and Hanley on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hanley. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley starts now.
Do you care whether or not John Fox has been told he's been fired?
Do I care? I would only care if I saw signs that he'd already quit. And we talked to Olin Krutz last week, and he said, "Let me tell you something. You know, everyone talks about when players quit before a season's over." And he said, "Pay attention. A lot of coaches quit well before the players do." I haven't seen a hint of that. If there were reports that John Fox was the last guy in the building and the first guy out each and every day, or you saw him, all of a sudden he was in the society columns at Chicago Cut every night, holding court and closing a bar, then I'd have real concern that he'd basically called it a day, called it a season, called it a Bears career. But the fact of the matter is, it looks like he is still doing what he's been doing here, unfortunately, for 3 years with the results he's got. But it looks like he's putting in the same amount of time, same amount of effort. Unfortunately, you're getting the same results. So I would care if I thought he was, in fact, mailing it in. My question to you, Hub, and you'll be able to answer this question about whether you care or not. Do those conversations go on, even if it's just between Ryan Pace and John Fox? Does it need to be said? Is it unsaid? I mean, as John will tell you, the only thing he'll tell you is it's not his first rodeo. And, this is typical for the NFL. Everyone knows when the results are the results, and they have been for 3 seasons. What's coming, but my guess would they wouldn't even have that conversation because nothing's private anymore, right? If they had that conversation where Ryan went to him 2 weeks ago and said, look, we're making a change, we have to make a change, but I expect you to be professional, I'm going to be professional. Eventually, someone would find that out, and if that got out via social media or an Ian Rappaport or a View Report at Hub, that wouldn't serve anybody well. And so I don't know that they would even have that conversation with the fear of that getting out and creating another layer of dysfunction for them.
Well, that's exactly it, Brad. I mean, we're talking about, are we concerned about whether somebody else has had a private conversation that really shouldn't be any of our business? And so, my answer is no. I don't really care if he's been told or not. I would care if he couldn't figure it out. You know, I would care if he wasn't smart enough to read the tea leaves, you know, and I think he is. And my guess is, you know, for mainly fans, but even some media who've never been on a beat, you know, people who, you know, maybe you've been in talk radio all your life, but you've never been up, you know, in the building every day. We tend to get this vision of these guys, you know, as to, you know, how they act and how they should act and that they're not normal people, that they're different somehow. Well, they are normal people. They have the same conversations that we do. Nobody's ever worked in a company or a business with more than 5 or 8 or 10 employees up to hundreds or thousands where you don't talk about stuff. You know, you say, oh, well, don't tell so-and-so. But
right,
I mean,
right.
People are people. You know, and so, of course, him and Ryan Pace have talked, you know, and of course he has a sense of what's going on. Has it been made official? Has he been given a deadline? Has he been told it's going to be 10 o'clock Monday morning? Probably not, and I don't care. But I'm sure that he and Ryan Pace have had regular conversations about this is how it's going. This is what we got. They've got goals that they've set. They know whether they've achieved them or not. And John Fox is a pretty savvy guy. As he likes to say, it's not his first rodeo. He's been in the business. He knows what's going on.
100% agree with Hub. First of all, I think he knows what's going to happen come Monday morning or even Sunday night. Do I care that he's been told or not? No more than does he care what goes on in my life. You know, what happens on Monday, then I'll be concerned. What's going on behind the scenes right now, I don't care at all. And by the way, he's going about to get a 1 year's free vacation for the salary and go live on a beach or on a bungalow somewhere.
Hey, Dave, let's be clear. Free vacation, he makes over $5 million a year. A little more than a free vacation.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, he's not worried about putting food on the table for the family or making the mortgage payment. But you'll up to your point. I mean, there is pride involved, and no one wants to be publicly shown the door. I mean, it'd be tough enough if you were just fired from any job. And knowing it, you know, questioning, well, okay, what could I have done differently? Is it, you know, am I that bad of an employee or whatever it is? But when it is a public stage, because you're getting the $5 million a year, there's still obviously, you know, the human aspect.
Yeah,
of it.
Dave, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you,
but
these are high class problems, guys. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day.
By the way, if it happens immediately after the game, and I don't know if you can handicap that, if Ryan Pace all of a sudden John Fox doesn't show up in the post game, it's is what's there to talk about after the Minnesota Bears game. You'll get first bite at the apple right here on the Score because, of course, you're part of the All Star pre and post game here on the Score, and you'll be out the 85 Executive Drive in Aurora. And so if it happens immediately after the game or if the reports start to come out before the game, Hub and, of course, Olin Krutz and Big Cat in the post game, and beforehand you'll get Hub and Patrick Manley. It's right here on the Score, 9 until 12 for the pregame. And, of course, immediately after, you have 3 and 5 on the post game. Come out and join the guys, 85 Executive Drive in Aurora, because we'll be covering the news even though it's New Year's Eve, and they might want to do it immediately. Just kind of get lost in the holiday shuffle as well.
Well, they could, Dave. I'm going to toss it back in a second, but I want to make one more point I should have made during my time. I'm sorry. I don't think that's going to happen. I'll actually be in here with Greg Gabriel Monday morning from 6 to 10. Black Monday, we figured, why not? It's not just the Bears. There's going to be 6, 7, 8, 9 of these. But the other thing you got to realize, it depends on whether this is his last job or not as far as what he's been told, what he's going to let us know, because these guys understand most of them are planning on continuing to work in the league. And so there's an element to how you handle it and how you carry yourself as well. And you don't want to come off as a bad guy who's going to be difficult with a new organization. What was interesting to me about what John said yesterday is I got the sense that he knows what's coming, and I kind of got the sense that he may not be sure he's done yet, because if I'm him, after 3 head coaching jobs, and he's probably grossed $40 or $50 million coaching football at 63, I'm not looking for my next job. But he sounded to me yesterday like a guy who knows what's coming and isn't sure yet if he wants to try and get another job somewhere.
But he did add, Hub, that he's confident that he could always get a job
right
in the league.
Right.
So,
right,
yeah, I was wondering if he would ever be a head
coach.
I don't think he's going to be a coordinator. After being a head coach for 15 years, it's sort of a come down for some of these guys, especially at 63 years old. It's certainly a possibility. I just don't see that in his future. But the one thing you talk about embarrassing, the one thing he should be embarrassed about, and it's organizational wide, is the record while he's been here for 3 years. But again, it's going to be over in about 5 days.
Brian, back to your point with the over-under, I'm going to say minus 5 p.m. John Fox gets canned after 5 p.m. beyond. That's my prediction.
After everyone clears out, all the media's gone writing their stories, they'll get a press release?
Well, they don't,
exactly.
Guys, I've been around a few of these. As a matter of fact, almost 20 years as part of the Bears broadcast, we used to travel with the team.
Sure.
And what they don't want is a horrible, uncomfortable plane ride with a lot of young players that are coming back. And so, you know, whatever happens, they're not going to want that to be the conversation of the post game and the ride home. You know, earliest it's going to be is sometime Sunday night when it starts to leak out. It'll be his agent who starts to leak it out. And you may not even hear it leak until Monday morning.
I want to see progress, though. That's my thing. I don't care whether or not John Fox has been told he's going to be fired. I want to see Mitchell Trubisky make strides. And we saw that on Sunday against the 49ers. So as long as that happens for me, I don't care either way.
Yeah, I thought it'd be a pretty good running back.
That's a good question. I think,
Next question. Are you surprised that Bears president Ted Phillips reportedly is doing preliminary work on head coaching candidates? Should he be at this point?
You know, I got to be careful with this one. Brian and I were talking about this when we came in. I got myself stuck in one yesterday. Our job is to be journalists, is to seek this stuff out. We had a report yesterday at Pro Football Weekly. It's my report. They're my sources that Bruce Arians is going to hang him up in Arizona. And I was really surprised by the play we got, you know, and phone started ringing off the hook. I've got three interviews between 9 and 11 today when we get off.
So he's retiring or being forced out or mutual kind of?
I think it's mutual, but I think it's him instigating it. Arians has quietly had some health issues in recent years. There's been some frustrations there. They may be looking at a rebuild there. They did not get in on the quarterback last year. And so according to some people pretty close to him, you know, he's already made this decision lifestyle wise, not necessarily a retirement, but at least a year or two away. And since he is 63 or maybe he's 64 now, it could end up being retirement. But the only reason I mentioned that, it doesn't matter, you know, we had a story yesterday, is I know how these things go.
Well, it's actually good to know because, you know, he came this close, finger and thumb together, to being the Bears guy.
Well,
and he thought he was sitting in the hotel waiting for the call because he thought he was going to be the Bears head coach. And next thing you know, they went with the Mark Trestman experience.
And, Brian, that's what surprised me about when we broke the story. I said, because immediately Browns fans, Bears fans, Colts fans, let's get him here. The story that we're reporting is he's stepping away from coaching,
yep.
Not that he's being fired in Arizona. But my point is that the people in Arizona kind of went nuts on me. Some of the media don't like it when a guy outside breaks the story. And then, of course, he what was interesting, I got to do this because I was talking to Bernsey about it last night on the air. He called it fake news and then said immediately, I'm just quoting the president. And I took that as saying, well, we know that 99% of what Trump calls is fake news is real. And so he kind of almost confirmed our story for me. Here's where I'm going with this, though. I don't have a reputation one way or the other in Arizona. Ian Rappaport broke this story about Ted Phillips. Eli, I'm finally getting back to your initial question, okay? If you recall, I think it was week 5 or week 6 last year, prior to the Monday night game against Minnesota, Ian Rappaport broke a story that Ted Phillips was considering bringing in a consultant to evaluate their football operation. The Bears front office and ownership was furious. The story turned out to be completely bogus. It turned out they had brought in a marketing consultant to look at some of their business operations. It was a bad report. And I heard from some people in the organization how they felt about this particular reporter. Ian's first national byline was with us at Pro Football Weekly. He's a good reporter.
Sure.
You don't get these all right. But considering
he had the Aaron Cromer too, right, with the tearful apology to Jay and after bad mouthing him outside the locker room, and
probably yes,
yeah,
I tend to forget who gets these stories.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks that we're out here groveling
sure.
for him. I don't even remember who had most of
yeah.
them. You know, but anyway, I know that he in particular has got some tough relationships with some of the people in that Bears front office. So what I'm getting to here is I'm not sure how good this report is because you know. From the moment they hired Ryan, you know, Ted has said, I'm not involved in the football operation anymore. Even he's tried to just. Now, I think one of the mistakes that the McCaskies and Ted make is that there's some bad optics here. They don't distance him from it enough. Their fan base wants to believe that he's not involved in the football operation anymore. But I don't believe that Ted Phillips is up there going over a list of candidates for head coaching jobs. And if he is, it would only be because Ryan Pace gave it to him and asked him to work on some of the technicalities as far as getting permission, that type of thing. So am I surprised? I'm not even sure it's true. And if it is true, the work that he would be doing would have nothing to do with the decision as to what coach you hire. It would be making sure that they don't break any rules, that they don't get a fine or lose a draft choice or something like that.
Well, and I think part of the report, if I'm not mistaken, was he was calling some of his contacts and other owners and other organizations to get recommendations. Now, that's different than saying, is the guy available contractually? You know, what hoops would we have to jump through to even get an interview? I mean, some of that's just obvious, right? And if you're giving a guy a promotion, he can interview. If he's interviewing for head coach, he's a coordinator, they have to allow him to do it.
But here's exactly why I question the report altogether. He doesn't have contacts in that.
Well,
that's why they bring in consultants.
That's why Ernie Corsi was around. And that's one thing about Ted, very, you know, very nice guy when you're around him. He's sociable enough. But, you know, we had some score functions here a number of years ago, and he basically said, in so many words, well, you know, if you're around this thing for a quarter of a century, you become a football guy, even though I wasn't a football guy coming into the building. He was their accountant, basically, their numbers guy. That can be dangerous. That can be dangerous if you think by osmosis you pick up enough, and yet your title is president. So, you know, who's going to question whether you're a football guy or not in that building? I know when the Hawks did their complete remake and Rocky Wirtz wanted to change the entire face and culture and everything else, you know, one of the first things that they did was get Bob Pulford out of the building, physically out of the building, because he'd been there for 28, 30 years watching Bill Wirtz's money and making sure that they did just enough to get in the playoffs and not enough to win a Stanley Cup, because that wasn't their goal. That's how you know, and he wasn't the only one to get out of the building. And I mean, they started sorting through and figured out who was a keeper and who wasn't. You know, if you keep Ted in the building, you're always going to have these questions about how much he has his fingers involved in the football operation.
Here's what I think people forget. I think Ted takes a bad rap on some of this in recent years. His first hire after getting the job was Jerry Angelo. Jerry Angelo took the Bears to the Super Bowl in his fifth year as the general manager. The first half of the Angelo regime was really successful. The drafting, the winning, the getting to a Super Bowl. And then for whatever reason, some things changed and the drafting didn't go so well. Phil Emery, that's Ted's hire. And that was a bad hire. And then Tressman compounded it, so he takes a beating for that. Ryan and John are not his hire. Ernie, of course, he came in. George put his stamp on it. And supposedly Ryan's running the football operation. So I think Bears fans should stop beating Ted Phillips up, because obviously he's a pretty good businessman. He's made a lot of money for the family, and that's his primary job as the president and CEO.
Guys, let's get this straight. Ted Phillips is not hiring the Bears' next head coach. That being said, there's always a business aspect to everything, and whenever that next Bears coach will be named, Ted Phillips will be involved from a business end, whether it's a contract status or some kind of paperwork, and even going over the league with the Rooney Rule. I'm sure they have to check every box. So Ted Phillips will be involved. I think the report, the way it was initially portrayed by Ian Rappaport, was probably wrong, because he's not the one who's going to make the decision. But he'll be in on the business end of the decision. I'm pretty confident in saying that Ryan Pace will get, like you said many times already, Hub, a general manager gets two cracks at a head coach, and he'll get his second crack very shortly.
Let's say this report is half true. Let's say that the Bears organization doesn't have trust in Ryan Pace, regardless if Ted Phillips is just doing the initial conversations. That's a problem. You have to be able to trust your general manager. And I think that people forget, just because Ryan Pace was here in year one, and people say he deserves a pass for those draft picks, He's attached to John Fox's hip. With John Fox's record, 14-33, whatever it may be, Ryan Pace deserves that hatred, whatever it is, from fans. I don't think you can give Ryan Pace a pass. And again, whether Ted Phillips is making these phone calls or not, it might be an indication that the Bears organization doesn't necessarily trust Ryan Pace, even though he didn't make the call on John Fox, and that was the upper management.
Well, that's a bigger issue.
Yeah, the only problem there is if you don't trust him, you better fire him, too.
Yeah, exactly right. You better be working on a list for GMs as well.
Yeah, fair question.
Next question. Looking back, who would you prefer, Mitchell Trubisky or Jimmy Garoppolo?
Look, anyone who's not paying attention watching Garoppolo, who, again, in the league longer, didn't have as many starts as Trubisky has to this point, but was in a system. If you're going to learn, you want to learn from Belichick and Brady. Certainly, the guy looks the part. He looked the part in his debut here, even though they end up with five field goals and not getting in the end zone. Now he's 4-0. There's an energy. Maybe it's a short bump, just like you get when you fire a coach or whatever. But for a month running now, it looks like he actually is the real deal, and that's why, to their credit, the Bears had their sights on Jimmy Garoppolo a couple of years ago when he wasn't available. I mean, and that's a, so, you know, Ryan Pace talked about every year drafting a quarterback, finally got around to doing it and doing it in a an expensive way in terms of trading assets to get up one spot to make sure he got Trubisky, his guy. You know, timing, sometimes it's luck, sometimes timing isn't in your favor. I think in his heart of hearts, Ryan Pace would have loved to have made that deal for Jimmy Garoppolo if he had become available, and he might have paid the premium then if in fact, they're looking for at least a first-round pick. And the reports, I think, Cubby, correct me, I think there were two first-round picks. So, you know, they're asking for the world at the time because they knew they had time on their side, New England did, because they didn't have to make a decision on him. But when it came time to either franchise tag him and pay him $20-plus million or give him a long-term contract as if he was a starting quarterback, even though the ageless one, Tom Brady, doesn't look like he wants to, you know, give it up anytime soon, they weren't going to commit to that. So sometimes, you know, luck isn't on your side. But certainly, I think if you just look who right now, if you were have to say, I'm putting my money on Trubisky or Garoppolo to be a Pro Bowl quarterback moving forward, I think you have to go with Garoppolo.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different answers here. First of all, 11 starts for Trubisky after just 13 starts in college. Six starts now for Garoppolo. But Garoppolo was a three-year starter in college, and he has spent three full seasons studying at the feet of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Garoppolo should be ahead of ahead of Mitch Trubisky right now. So I'm going to wait a little while before I say which one is going to be the better NFL quarterback. That question is at least a year or two away from being answered. What I will say is if the price is a second-round pick for Garoppolo, which is what the price the Patriots paid and the price the 49ers paid, as opposed to the third overall pick in the first round plus two threes and a four,
sure.
Well, you know, then that's I would obvious. Rather have Garoppolo. Yeah. But Brian, you're absolutely right. I mean, I can tell you for a fact. I don't know what the actual asking price was, but I know for a fact that Bill Belichick did not want to unload Garoppolo. He wanted to keep him. They were trying to figure out a way to keep him. And so if you go back to prior to the draft where they took took Trubisky, we were hearing two ones. You know, whether a one and a two would have done it with the third overall pick, that we don't know. But I do know that it's possible the Patriots were saying no to everything because even they didn't think that Brady could have another year like he's had this year. And once they got a few weeks into the season, they saw what was happening. They knew they were going to lose, you know, Garoppolo for nothing at the end of the year. They had to pull the trigger out. I'm surprised that even when they made the trade, that they couldn't have gotten more than that from Cleveland. And that's where there's reports out there that they didn't want him in the AFC. Whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Pretty impressive, Garoppolo out in San Francisco, taking a bad team to four straight wins, not working with much, although you can say the same thing about Trubisky here. The thing that I keep talking about with Trubisky is the jury's still out, folks. I mean, 13 games in college, 7 so far as a starter in the NFL. I still do not know what kind of quarterback ultimately he will be, and I probably won't know that until he's surrounded by a better cast of offensive weapons, not at running back, but at wide receiver specifically, and even an upgrade of the offensive line. You're right, Hub, that, you know, both teams had to give up something to get either of these two quarterbacks. I really do like growing my own, meaning quarterbacks. I wish the Cubs would grow their own pitching staff instead of trying to trade or go after free agents, but that's a different story. So, again, the jury is still out. Right now, Garoppolo is the better quarterback. Ask me again in about a year.
I would also say Jimmy Garoppolo. So, quick, clean sweep. For me, it's because Jimmy Garoppolo speeds up the Bears' rebuilding process. If Jimmy Garoppolo is in Chicago, the Bears have a much better chance of at least going 500 next year. And people who are saying the Bears are the next Los Angeles Rams, look at Jared Goff. He had 3 years at Cal. Again, Mitchell Trubisky, 13 games at North Carolina. He still is behind Jared Goff in terms of progressing as a quarterback. So if for that reason, I would also take Jimmy Garoppolo.
You know, and Eli, you say rebuild, and here's my question to Hub, since you've been around the league forever. If they had just come out, the Bears had just come out Cub-like and say, you know, we're taking it down to the studs. This is a rebuild. Things that I guess are normally not said in so many words in the NFL because it's verboten. You can never, you know, every season's sacred. Would John Fox even get more time? Certainly Ryan Pace, I mean, just as soon as he drafted Trubisky, everyone assumed he bought himself some extra years because now you have to wait to see how the quarterback develops. But if they just put it all out on the table and saying, look, we've got to, you know, we're chasing the bad characters out. We're starting from scratch. We're going to go get our quarterback, and they should have done sooner. Would that have given Bears fans, you know, would transparency bought more time and goodwill from Bears fans? Because even though you kind of know it's a rebuild, and we talk about it here on The Score all the time, and you get frustrated with the progress or lack thereof, you know, no one's really called it that. So now they're supposedly competing, and you know, when all 3-5, all of a sudden we think there's a shot that could be in playoff conversation until they lose to the Packers. Would that have changed anything if they just come out and said, "Here's what we're doing"?
You know, I don't think so for two reasons. Three reasons. The first one's pretty simple. They pretty much did acknowledge what they were doing when they gave away Brandon Marshall and they told Lance Briggs and Pina Tillman to go away right. When they might have been able to play. I mean, we knew what they were doing, and they wanted us to know what they were doing. But there's two other factors here. One, going back to 1990 when they added the two wildcard teams and they went to the 12-team playoff format, at least four teams every year that were not in the playoffs the year before have been in the playoffs. In 14 of the last 15 seasons, at least one team has gone from worst to first in its division. And I just happened to be working on this last night for one of our shows this weekend. You've already got six teams in this year. And if any two of Baltimore, Buffalo, the LA Chargers, and I forget who the fourth is, but any two of them get in this weekend, and two of them almost certainly will, you're going to have eight new playoff teams this year versus last year.
Mm-hmm.
It happens so quick in the NFL that you can't take the position that this is going to take 3, 4, 5 years. But here's number three to me is the biggest problem, okay? I don't think John Fox is getting fired because of this year. I think he's getting fired because of last year. Because he came here after taking over a 2-14 team in Carolina in year two, he went to the Super Bowl. They lost it, but he got there. Goes to Denver and takes over a 4-12 team, goes 8-8 his first year and gets to the playoffs with Tim Tebow, in some respects because Marion Barber couldn't get out of bounds.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And then, in his next 3 years, wins at least 12 games. So all the talk going into last year, after going from 5-11 Trestman's last year to 6-10, is, okay, here we go, it's year two, and they go 3-13. I think last year is what hammered him. If he had won 6 or 7 games last year and come back and won 6 this year, he might get one more year. But I think everybody turned on him about halfway through last year.
Really loaded question.
Do you believe the Cubs' concerns are about signing Jake Arrieta are more about him or the money?
I've always thought it was the 6 or 7 years that Jake guaranteed everyone. In 2016, one of his quotes, "Of course I'm going to get 6 or 7 years. No doubt about it. Some team's going to give me that." And he thought probably there would be half a dozen teams fighting to give him that kind of length of contract. And obviously, if you're going to go 6 or 7 years, the money's going to follow. I think that, you know, interesting Gordon Whitmire writing yesterday that, you know, why isn't the full court press going on with Jake Arrieta since he's still out there and obviously very much available compared to what they're doing with Yu Darvish, who's shooting down reports that he's already agreed with the Cubs. You know this, Hub, you always should know, and you should know about your own player, right? A guy's been here for a few years. You self-scout. You should know if the loss in velocity means anything substantially. You should know if, you know, he's on the decline, but you also know that he's a big stage guy and the numbers back that up. You know he doesn't get to the eighth inning. You're probably looking to hook him in the fourth or fifth inning too many times. But the last 11-12 starts, I mean, sub-3 ERA, there's every reason to say, okay, now if it's a 3 or 4 year deal, why aren't they interested in Jake Arrieta? Because I don't think Yu Darvish is getting 7 years either. I think he might end up with 5, and I think Jake might end up with 4, much to his chagrin. But there seems to be more concern with the Cubs about the player, not just the money. I think if they got him on their terms, you would think they would grab a pen and sign him, right? If it's a 4-year deal and $25 million per, let's get $100 million, because they have money coming off the books. They have about $40 million to work with this year. But it seems like they have questions about the player and about injury a little bit last year and just, you know, being different than Cy Young Jake. And that surprises me a little bit because, you know, I know people can dismiss what Yu Darvish did with the Dodgers in the World Series, but I can't. 21-plus yeah. ERA in the most important games, and you know what Jake does during elimination games. If you're getting him closer to your terms, I really wonder why the Cubs aren't more interested in trying to get that done.
Yeah, I thought what I loved about Gordon's piece yesterday was the chart that put him side by side
yeah.
because I can be a little more forgiving of Darvish because it was actually just that last World Series game. I mean, I was at the game in Wrigley where he came out and got rocked in the first inning and then settled down and pitched
sure.
7 outstanding innings.
Right.
So I think there's this perception, you know, well, Arrieta's older. There's actually only 5 months difference between the two of them. Even the loss in velocity, I believe 15 was the first time he ever went over 200 innings, like 225, and then he comes back last year. His best stretch, other than the second half of that Cy Young season, was the last 6 weeks of last year. And I'm not even sure he doesn't get a mile an hour back on velocity. I think what it comes down to is the totality of the money, if that makes any sense, not just the money. If he would take 3 or 4 years, I'll bet you they'd make him the highest paid pitcher in baseball on an annual basis. But to be tied to that money in the fifth, sixth, seventh year, that's bad business. I think they're probably already starting to worry about the Lester contract a little bit. So do they want to have two of those contracts with all these kids?
When you got to pay Chris Bryant and some of these other kids, yeah.
I don't think they can give him what he wants. And so what it really comes down to, it was interesting because I always got the sense that Arrieta might be the last guy in the world to say no to Boris. That you know, he wants every penny, boy. But listening to him talk late last year, I almost got the sense that he was getting melancholy about the possibility of leaving Chicago. So maybe the fact that the market's not that hot, if he would take 100, maybe even 110 million for 4 years, 100 million for 3 years, who knows?
And I said you get creative. Look, yeah. You give him a 4-year deal, he can opt out after two. You give him a 4-year deal, opt out after two, or the fifth year vest if you hit certain innings pitched. So now it's a 5-year deal because at that point you're still obviously a viable pitcher. And it's amazing, you know, his wife posted some pictures, I guess, on Instagram. They're in Seattle over the holidays. Immediately, he must be out there visiting with the Mariners. You know, the talk still is Milwaukee is going to swoop in at the last second and really stoke the Cubs-Brewers rivalry by signing Jake Arrieta because of the numbers against the Brewers, including up at Wrigley North.
You know, really, if you go back to 16, when everybody was talking about wait till the 18 free agent crop and how hot this group was going to be, it's the whole market. It's not just Jake Arrieta. Yeah. There hasn't been a big money signing yet. And so I think part of it's the market, but I think in the case of Arrieta and the Cubs, it's the combination of the length and the total dollars. It's not that they would mind giving him $30 million a year for the first three years.
Guys, my father taught me something early in life, and it's always stuck with me. He always used to tell me the bottom line is the bottom line, meaning money. And there's no question in my mind that's what this is all about. The Cubs have had discussions with Scott Boras in the past, maybe trying to get an extension earlier for Arrieta, so they know what Boras and Arrieta are looking for, and it's a lot of money and it's a lot of years, and you guys have pretty much touched that already. They're not going there. I don't know if they're going to go there really with anybody else at this juncture. And you made mention of it also, Hub, and we talked about this yesterday. No one has signed anything longer than a 3-year deal for a lot of money. I really think that something is going to happen here between the Players Association and Major League Baseball. If there's no signings, you're going to start hearing that word collusion real shortly.
Jumping back to Brian's point, I agree. I think it has to do with the health and also his velocity. You look at his fastball, his slider, his cutter, and his curveball and changeup. They've all dipped at least a percent on Fangraphs over the last couple of years since his Cy Young back in 2015. So if you're the Cubs, you already got your title with Lester. You brought him in. You said, well, we'll give him the big money and the big years, and we will win a title and we'll eat the rest of the contract. But if you're the Cubs with Jake Arrieta, you have to have a team option there, not a player option. You have to say, okay, 3 years, and then if you hit 190 plus innings, 200 plus innings consistently, then we'll give you that extra year. Because if you don't, then you're stuck with the exact same player as in John Lester.
So what's your question?
Finally, who's...
No, I just laughed at Coop, whatever you're saying.
Yeah, Don Cooper, great guy. Who's impressed more, Nikola Mirotic or Chris Dunn for the Bulls?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. We kind of started to touch on this a little while ago. I think Chris Dunn. I think there's just been a perception that he was a throw-in, that Minnesota was getting rid of a mistake, you know, and he doesn't look like that to me. He looks like a legitimate lottery pick, and it may have just been a fresh start. I mean, he's only in his second year in the NBA. What is he, 21?
He was a 4-year player.
Okay, so he's 23 then.
Right, yeah.
Probably 23, maybe. For some reason, I thought already he was 22. Maybe he was a young 4-year player. Anyway, I thought that they were just, you know, throwing him in there to give the Bulls an expiring rookie contract that they could deal with in some way or another. The kid I watched last night could be your point guard for a while to come. You know, he's still got to become a better distributor. He's got to become a better game manager. He's got to make the other players around him better. But the fact that he's getting his own points and assists and starting to put some numbers together, I'm really surprised. As far as Mirotic, I was led to believe from the beginning that he was capable of this, you know, and And sometimes you need to take one in the nose to wake up. You know? So I guess I'm not completely shocked that he's capable of the numbers he's putting up. I am a little surprised that the team seems to be following him. He does seem to be the clear leader out there. I'm not last night. I forget who they played in the game before, but I'm
Boston.
Watching. Was it the Boston?
Yeah.
No, they got beat by Boston. There's one game I was watching last week, and him and Portis are chest bumping all over the place, and they're in each other's faces. And now that may stop the second they get off the court. I don't
it
care.
It does, apparently.
And I don't care. That's not my problem. But it's not on the court, you know, and it's not an issue. So maybe I'm surprised that he's pulling that off. But I think in terms of their complete performances, I'm more surprised by Dunn than Mirotić.
Yeah, it is interesting because Nico, you know, this is what was advertised when he was over in Spain. And, you know, wait 2-3 years, we're going to see this guy come over here. And he's not the finished product yet. But when he is ready, NBA ready, you're going to really be impressed. This is the type of player they sold. And finally, you're seeing, again, we've seen a march or two of this. So it's, week three of this? So does it sustain itself into January? Past the first day of trading him, January 15th, are they interested in seeing more and see where this goes in terms of what their value, his value is in the trade market? And as Steve Rosenblum said, I don't think I'd ever would have ever thought Nico would be the broken face of the franchise, as Steve wrote. Chris Dunn, though, is interesting because this was the player that I identified when they talked to Boston a couple of years ago about trading Jimmy Butler. They were going to take the fifth overall pick, and by all accounts, they were going to get Chris Dunn because that's how much they were sold on him. Then he goes and doesn't play enough defense for Tibbs, has one of those seasons where as a rookie, you know you make a mistake, you know you're heading to the bench with Tom Thibodeau, and that's just the way it is. To see him thrive in this thing and to see him become the explosiveness, Antetokounmpo, you see what, you know, taking him to the hoop yesterday, mm-hmm. and the basketball IQ, the comfort with which he's running hoi ball and everything else, I'm more impressed with Chris Dunn, but I think that's who the Bulls thought this player was all along. And you have to give him credit that I thought they settled for the Jimmy Butler trade. I thought they took the best deal out there, and I don't think it was anyone's idea of a grand slam or even a home run. And yet now, very interested to see Zach LaVine healthy. Markkanen's shown you enough that you're very encouraged he can be an all-star type player. And Chris Dunn, I mean, if you get two out of three of those guys, you're talking about something.
Well, first of all, no one is happier, as well they should be, than the Bulls that Nico Mirotić is playing the way he is, because that might allow them to get a first-round pick, especially if some team goes down with an injury at that position. And there's a lot of teams, even without an injury, that do need a stretch four. And Nico Mirotić can shoot from distance like very few in the NBA. So that has been very impressive. All that being said, Chris Dunn has been more impressive to me because you weren't 100% sure what you were getting with him. Yeah, I saw him in college. I was impressed with him, but that's at the collegiate level. He had a bust rookie season, but a lot of that is because of Tom Thibodeau. He was glued to the bench up there, and Thibodeau just isn't very good playing rookie players. And so his confidence was shot. But once he started having success here over the last 5 or 6 weeks, you can see it game by game. His confidence is growing, and his talents are coming to the forefront. And you're right, both you guys making mention that he still has miles to go in his game. His shot selection sometimes isn't good. He doesn't always finish at the basket. His outside shot still needs improvement. All that being said, he definitely is the point guard not only of the present but of the future. So he's the more impressive of the two to me.
Yeah, for me, it's Chris Dunn. I loved his game at Providence, one of my favorite point guards to watch in the Big East Conference. And the big thing for him was, could he develop a jump shot? He's shooting 44% from the field. You want to see him improve that as well. But he could take it to the rim. Brian, you mentioned attacking the rim and finishing against Antetokounmpo. That doesn't happen very often, but he has length at the point guard position. We saw it yesterday also, creating for others. He's able to draw the double on the drive and kick it to Mirotić, and you don't have a point guard like that besides Justin Holiday, who doesn't always get double team or rarely gets double team on the drive to the rim.
So to answer the question, is premature. If you ask me 3 or 4 months from now, I'd be in a much better position to answer that question.
Thank you, Mark. That is our 5 at 5. 312-644-6767 is our number. Of course, you can always text the score and our show via the text zone brought to us by the Grossinger Auto Group. Find more than 5,000 vehicles every day at grossinger.com, 670-11-67011. If you'd like to text us, we're going to visit with Dan Pompey, talk all things Bears and NFL. And just a few on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.